Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to Nighthawks Radio. Blog Talk Radio, we own the night. Welcome, Coach Epps, along with my co-host, Coach.
Coach Coop, you don't know, you're supposed to introduce me.
I'm a little disturbed. Last week you did the same thing, you didn't introduce me. You know, I'd rather have a nice big fanfare, but, you know, I'm getting, like I'm taking second cheer, and I don't like that.
Well, Coach, that's usually what happens when you're a co-host.
Well, I'm an Ed McMahon, you Johnny Carson. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, except I don't, you know, make Johnny's money and you don't make Ed's money. But I understand the correlation you're trying to make. But I would even go like more like Batman and you Robin.
Well, at least Robin's cape's a little better.
Yeah.
A little tight. Hey, we got a good show tonight. We're going to take a little look at the comparison of coaches and players, Coach, tonight.
Yeah, that should be quite interesting, Coach. That's an excellent topic for the show tonight. Not only that, Coach, like we open up every week, we can talk about last week's game.
Let's move on to this week's subject, Coach.
Yeah, right. You know, here at Blog Talk Radio, Coach, we don't admit whether we win or lose. We're going to talk about it all. That's why this is Sports Talk Radio, Nighthawks Radio, Coach. We're not impartial to talk about wins and losses. Whether we're obtaining wins or we're obtaining losses is all the same and it's all good. And last week we played the
Detroit Demolition
that came to town, Coach, and we appreciate the owner for bringing them down and the players for playing, and it was a hard-fought game. The first half, the score was 0-0, Coach, and then we went into the third quarter, and it was still 0-0, and unfortunately, and fortunately for Detroit, that they pulled it out in the fourth quarter with a 13-0 victory, Coach.
No question, Coach, and you know, we keep it real here on on Nighthawks Radio, and like you said, we bring it, whether we like it or not, we bring it to the fans and let them know, give them an inside look at what took place during the course of that game. And you're right, and my hat goes off to the Detroit Demolition. It took that long ride from Detroit, Motor City, all the way down to Baltimore, and we hope for a better outcome, but, we came off a loss, and they came off a loss, and somebody had to give, and you know, it resulted in that three scoreless shutout quarters until the final last 11 minutes of the game where the Detroit Demolition broke through with 13 points and put the Nighthawks out. But it was a well-fought game. I think it was maybe a couple of injuries in there. But both sides played their heart out. And my hat goes off to both the ladies that played and the coaching staff as well.
And that is an excellent way to be a good sportsmanship there, Coach, because, like I said, Detroit was they was up for the task. And after the long ride from Detroit down to Baltimore, we congratulate the Detroit Demolition on their win. And we're proud of our ladies because we fought hard, Coach. And, I mean, if you're going to lose, that's the way you want to lose a game, with a hard-fought contest. And I think we did a great job.
No question, Coach. Both teams basically kept the ball on the ground, and that was a struggle. None of the passing games seemed to were getting off in the right direction. Detroit was having difficulty, and so was the Nighthawks. But they stuck to the ground game, and it was just a seesaw battle back and forth. And a couple of unfortunate mistakes for the Nighthawks down in there in the end zone. And what can we say? Detroit got out of Baltimore with a win and put them in the win column, Coach.
And that is absolutely correct, Coach. When I review the game and look at some of the finer points in the game, Coach, I think if you'd have did a better job coaching defense, we'd have won that game.
Well, Coach, I did a good job with defense for three quarters. Unfortunately, my ladies let me down. But like I said, they actually didn't let me down. I mean, you know, your offense sputtered a little bit. And I don't know what kind of plays you were calling, but my defense seemed to be on the field a lot. And they did the best they could, unfortunately. And like I said, the offense had a couple of foopas, and they held up. You know, we was trying to get three and out, and unfortunately, Detroit pumped up after a long ride, and was determined not to go home a loser.
You're absolutely right, Coach. But it was a great contest. A lot of fans came out to see our second game of the year at home, Coach, at Mergenthal Vocational Technical High School. And it was a hard-fought contest. And like I said, I was proud of our ladies and proud of the coaching staff. And we're really trying to put it together, Coach. And basically, we have a pretty much a rookie team. And for a rookie team, I don't think they're doing a half-bad job, Coach.
No, Coach, no question. I mean, if we can take these defensive struggles that we've had, games like this, that's something to build on. I mean, Baltimore's they're known for their defense, the Ravens here, and the Nighthawks are following their footsteps. I mean, three tough innings, scoreless innings, not innings, but quarters of nobody scoring, back and forth, and that's kind of the ball that Baltimore plays. And, the Nighthawks has picked up on it, and that's a good foundation, to go into the following season, although this season's not over yet, we got a couple people out that was unable to make the game, but they'll be back next week, and I expect a little better outcome. But, again, it's a good foundation, a good defensive foundation for us to build on in the future.
Okay. We have a call already, Coach. I mean, we haven't got into tonight's topic already, but, I mean, we love to hear from the people. And 410, are you a cold caller? Are you there? Hello, caller, are you there? Well, we seem to be having some type of technical difficulties, Coach. We'll try to get right back to the caller from the 410, are you, Coach? And we're going to open up with this week's topic, Coach. Like we said, we're talking about coaches and players and challenges that it presents to both.
Coach, let me just start off with this. You've been in the league, and both of us have been in the league. We've coached together. But, I want to take a look at both sides, that as a coach and that as that of a player. Coach, in your years of coaching, and you start out with the early years with the young kids, What have you found that has been the common denominator for coaching football? You coached at the Pop Warner leagues. You coached at the high school leagues. You coached the semi pros. You coached the men's league. And you coached in the women's league. And from that aspect, what has been the common denominator for you?
Money, Coach. Money seems to be the common denominator and the root of my inspiration for coaching. I'm just joking, Coach. Just trying to make humor tonight. We're trying something different on the show. We're trying to keep it a little lighter. The last couple of weeks we've been kind of serious. But I want to have a lighter show tonight and, throw a little more laughter around. But the common denominator I see in all other coaches is just the love for the game. It's just a good heart. Four contests that I love being involved with is the emotional adrenaline rush that I get from coaching. It is the triumph, the success stories, the underdog stories, the Goliath stories. I mean, you have so many different sagas to coaching and watching people grow and some of the things that you go through, Coach. I mean, you can't help me personally. I can't help from loving football. I breathe, eat, shower, love football. I just embrace everything about the game. I mean, until they started putting in the turf fields, I love the smell of the grass when it's freshly cut and the smell of the fresh chalk being put down, to outline the out of bounds and the goal line. And it's that time of the year. I can smell it in the air when it's that time of the year, Coach. I just enjoy everything about the game, Coach. And coaching in the various different levels and different organizations, one thing I can say that I really find that all of them have in common, there's challenges. There's good challenges, there's bad challenges, there's good days, there's bad days, and there's great days. And I just embrace all of it because when you have a passion for doing something that you love to do, such as coach football, and have a privilege to do something that you love to do, like coach football, I can, even on the bad days, it's really good days, if you understand what I mean, when you have a passion for something.
Most definitely, Coach. I know exactly what you mean. And I want to take you to an area, and I want to talk about, come back to those challenges that you mentioned. And I want to, you know, talk about coaching style. You know, in the NFL, there's 32 coaches, and each one has a different coaching style. And I want to take you down the road to some of the great coaches in the past and ask you, if you had an opportunity, Coach, what one thing would you ask each one of these coaches? And I'm going to mention coaches that have different coaching styles. And let's talk with one of the great founders, and that's George Papa Halas, you know, the longtime owner of the Chicago Bears. If you had an opportunity to walk into his living room and sit down beside the old 1929 radio when he was first starting the league up and first starting the Chicago Bears up, what one question would be on your mind to ask him to help you as a coach?
Well, one of the things I would personally ask Papa Bear Halas, I would ask him really, you know, about the depth and the length of the passion that he has for the game. And does that core of that passion drives him to be a great coach? And what does he utilize out of that passion into his coaching style that makes him a good coach?
Because, you know, back in the day, you know, Papa Bear used to run the scores up. I mean, he saw the old highlight reels, you know, 73-0. I mean, outrageous scores that he would run up. But that's interesting. Now, move over to another coach, and you go to a very innovative coach, actually, who got the Martin pass off the ground, and that's Coach Paul Brown of the Cleveland Browns. If you had an opportunity to walk into his living room, Coach, of course, back in the day, he might not let you in his living room. but you walk into his living room, Coach, and what would you say to him? What would you ask him?
Well, I would pretty much ask that great coach, what was his introspective for getting into passing when everybody was running? How did he try to be innovative, and what caused him to want to move in another direction? And as he's seen the NFL progress, what made him want to take it to another level with the passing game, and why take that chance when it was going against the grain?
Very good, very good. And he was very instrumental. I mean, he had great players like, you know, Lance Allworth and some great receivers out there that could run like a deer. Now, moving on into further history, we have an opportunity to talk with the man who used to wear the funny fedora down in Dallas, you know, Tom Landry, you know, a very successful coach throughout all these years. Unfortunately, it was a poor, sad ending the way he was ousted down in Dallas. But if you had talked to Tom Landry, and Tom Landry is a very spiritual individual and a very stern individual, the way he dealt with his players. But let me just say this, too. Now, he dealt with a team that was known for all their off-field play. Not play, off-field fanatics, I should say. Things that they would do when they get themselves in a jackpot and are you there, Coach? I think you lost me there. I'm going to see if I can get you back online here. Are you there? Well, anyway, Coach Landry had a very interesting career. When he had very innovative in dealing with different players on the field, but they had a lot of off-field antics when they were there. You know, the parties, things of that nature, stories with Don Meredith and a few other players and after artist parties, you know, and to be able to win, you know, with that kind of team, you know, he had a lot of challenges to deal with, and I'm just kind of curious whether or not what would you be asking him if he was to if you had an opportunity to talk with him.
Well, if I had a opportunity to perhaps engage Tom Landry in our conversation. Ironically enough, it wouldn't be too much in-depth about football. I was always curious, and one of my number one questions for Tom Landry is, why when Dallas used to, before they set on offense, used to stand up and go back down in the three-point stands? I'm really curious of what was the meaning to that, you know, offensive set, that little signature that they had right before they hiked the ball. I mean, I've always been curious, and till this day, and the in-depth coaching experience and the coaching clinics I have came across, I still have no clue of why they used to do that.
Well, I think you need to buy his book, Coach. That's on the radio. Don't be so cheap and go out and spend $29.99 on his book. And that's probably where you would find that kind of insight from him. And you're right. It was a very signature move with the Dallas Cowboys. And now I don't know whether that was done to try to get people to jump off sides or what, but it was, you know, Dallas was a flashy town, and they did flashy things, and they won several Super Bowls to prove it.
Yeah.
So moving on, so now we move through history, and we have an opportunity to look at one of the really good coaches here in Baltimore, and a name by the name of Weeb Ewbank, a little short little guy, had an opportunity, did some things with the Baltimore coach, and subsequently went up to New York with the New York Jets, and he had a player by the name of Joe Namath under his belt, and, you know, Joe made some off-field antics, if you want to say, some predictions. I'm sure that's not what Coach Ewbank wanted, but needless to say, he made some predictions that he was going to beat Baltimore and they were going to win, and I'm sure that probably rattled his chain. But besides that, if you had an opportunity to talk with Weeb, what would you ask him?
Did he foresee the Colts moving from Baltimore to Indianapolis, Coach? Did he have any indication that that might happen in the future after all the championships Baltimore won and the rich history that Baltimore Colts had preserved in this town? I just want to know, did he really feel that they would ever leave Baltimore?
That's a good question, Coach. Real good question. So since you talk about that, let's talk about the guy up in Indianapolis where the Colts went to. What would you ask Bob Irsay on the back end?
Why, Bob? Why? And I want to say this phrase again because I want to actually coin this phrase, Coach. Why, Bob? Why?
All right. Well, as we move throughout the years, and we're moving up on time now, we're getting up here in the 70s, and you had a very flamboyant coach. You know, he was known for his toupee in Kansas City, another innovator of the game, and that was, I just skipped my mind just for a second now. That's killing me. Just had it on my tongue and just slipped my mind.
Okay.
Kansas City coach, I just...
Right. Kansas City coach to slip your mind.
Yeah, I see him looking right at him with the toupee on his head.
Toupee on his head.
Oh, Lord.
He talking about the one that talk like this. You got to get in there, Earl. You got to get in there and do that real quick now, Earl.
Keep a trickle hitting the ball down the field.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, Coach.
Well, I just had to know who I'm talking about. But,
yeah.
But if you had an opportunity to talk to him, you know, what would you ask him?
I would ask him about his hard-nosed approach that he had to football, Coach. He was one of them old-school hard-knock coaches that I loved his style, Coach, and I wanted to know when exactly did he realize he had to be so stern, and when did he feel that he needed to let up off the team at the same time, Coach? I always was curious about his coaching style, and he was a great coach as well, and that's one of the questions I would like to ask him.
Well, talking about his hard-nosed approach, there's another hard-nosed individual that had an opportunity to coach. He was a hard-nosed player. He played under the great years of George Halas under that franchise. And he operated as a defensive coach with Dallas. He was a tight end also with Dallas at one time. And he subsequently coached a singing Super Bowl team.
Ooh.
That's there. Yeah, that's right. Ooh, horse shack or something. Anyway, I'm talking about old Iron Mike. Iron Mike.
Mike Dicker.
Mike Dicker, no nonsense coach. That he put that team together, and I'm pretty sure that doing that video was not to his liking. But subsequently, I think it was for a charity, but it got put off well. It was done just before the Super Bowl. And I know, you don't want that kind of distractions or whatnot going into a big game like that. But unfortunately, it took place, and unfortunately for them, they were able to win that Super Bowl year. I believe they went 17-1, almost 18-1 that particular year, and that's a hell of a feat, hell of, chemistry. They had a lot of things going on. He had a great defensive coordinator under the name of Buddy Ryan that was also there during those years. And if you had an opportunity to, and of course if you weren't afraid and wet your pants when you stood up there and talked to Iron Mike.
Yeah, okay.
what would you ask?
Well, frankly, Earl, can I call you Earl Coach? Sorry. I would love to engage Mike Dicker, and he was a no-nonsense type of coach, but the first thing I would ask Mike, to be quite frank, is do he feel that after him and Buddy Ryan split that both of their careers tanked? And even though they had a love-hate relationship, do they feel that they was like the yin to each other's yang and needed to be together to be successful? And I always wondered that, because even when Buddy Ryan went to Philadelphia, he wasn't very successful to make the Super Bowl, and neither did Dicker make it again. And much as they bickered in Chicago, I really still think to this day they really needed each other. And if they'd have stayed together, I think they could have won more Super Bowls, Coach.
I think he answered that question, that very same question. I believe I saw that on a piece on America's Greatest Game or another interview, and they asked him pretty much the same question. Did he think because of their departure, could they have been even more successful had they stayed together? And if I remember, quite frankly, he said, it's possible. Unfortunately, they separated, but he thought that looking back on it in hindsight, that, yeah, they probably could have won some more championships. Mm-hmm. So we went down the lane. We talked about some great coaches. Papa Bear Hollis, Tom Landry, Paul Brown.
The Kansas City coach who you can't remember his name.
It'll come back to me somewhere. Somewhere before the night's over, I'm going to get his name.
Yeah, Mike Dicker.
At Mike Dicker. And we're going to move on. We're going to move on to another coach that had probably a little softer side, and that's old crying Dick Vermeil. I won the ball game for you. Then he had a mental breakdown. What would you do? But here's a guy, who really loves the game of football. He, like you said, lived, breathed, ate it, and he spent hour upon hour upon hour looking at film, game film, over and over and over again. Fortunately, he went in and he did win a Super Bowl with Ron Jaworski as a quarterback, and then subsequently left the game and then came back and he won one with the Los Angeles Rams. He had an opportunity to look at that from two different perspectives. He had an opportunity with two different teams, and he dealt with a lot of emotional issues back then. And to come back to the game, what kind of questions would you be curious about?
Well, Dick Vermeil had a very interesting style, and that's what I respect about every coach. Every coach does not have to coach under one style, and he proved that because Dick Vermeil also won a Super Bowl with the St. Louis Rams. He didn't subsequently win one with the Philadelphia Eagles, but he got to the Super Bowl. So, he had a Super Bowl winning formula, and he wasn't a hard-nosed coach like, say, Dick Vermeil or the guy you can't remember his name from Kansas City. But he had a very intriguing coaching style. And the one thing about Dick Vermeil that I loved was the fact that Dick Vermeil seemed to have a genuine love for each one of his players. And I found that fascinating because I've never heard a bad thing about Dick Vermeil from one of his players. And everybody genuinely loved to play for that guy. And to each his own. I don't think I would ever be on national TV crying, Coach. But if he wanted to shed a tear too, I mean, hey, that's Dick Vermeil, and I can't blame him for it. I mean, you know, I think you might can almost jerk one out the big fella if I won a Super Bowl, but not just quite get there.
That's interesting to know, Coach. Coaching is a shared experience. I mean, you can go online, you can find all kinds of information, and that's one of the great things about, you know, coaching football itself, because it's a shared sport. Nobody holds their cards close to the vest. You know, you can look up how to deal with, you know, various running plays, defenses, you name it, it's there. It's a shared profession. And coaches, when they get together and they go to clinics, you know, they share information. And that's one great thing about this fraternity of coaches. You know, it's a great camaraderie. And you've got some rogue individuals out there. But for the most part, just like the coaches that we've met around the league and in the IWFL, there's some great, genuine coaches in there, a very good sportsmen. And it says a lot. I mean, you don't see that in too many professions, and that's a great thing about the game of football.
And you're absolutely right, Coach Cooper. Coaching has a very endearing camaraderie, and it's a fraternity. Coaches is a fraternity, and the camaraderie of this fraternity is very compelling. It's very competitive, and it's also very, very humane, to the point where we do share a lot of ideas, and we generally want to see each other succeed other than the day we play each other. And I find that to be very interesting as well, because we have so much respect and admiration for one another except on the day we play each other that particular day. Also, what I find intriguing, I'm going to give you another coach that I also find intriguing.
Hank Stram. That's his name, Kansas City, Hank Stram. I had to get that in before you started, Coach.
Hey, you know what, Coach? I knew you were going to find out the Hank Stram name from Kansas City, the one you couldn't remember, and I was not going to provide for you this time. I appreciate the fact that you did remember his name, being that this is a talk radio show and that you should have the information before you go on air, but I appreciate all of that. But what I'm going to say to you is this. One of the coaches that I like his style of today is one of the premier coaches I find in the NFL right now is.
Don't jump ahead of me now. Don't go there.
No, I have to go there, Coach, because I'm in tune with this thought right now. And one of the coaches that I generally find intriguing today is the former Indianapolis Colts coach. Tony Dungy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just wanted you to know because you took a pause there, Coach. I wanted to catch you like you thought I forgot Tony Dungy's name. What I'm saying to you, Tony Dungy is one of the premier coaches of the day, well-respected throughout the league. Happened to be the first African-American coach to win a Super Bowl, but that's not what he's respected and loved for. It's his demeanor, it's his humility, it's his spirit as a human being, Coach, that every coach around the league talks highly of him and respect him, hold him in high regard. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, Coach, because – one, Tony Dungy is a former Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and as we all know, Coach Epps is an avid Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So that's the first reason I'm bringing this up. The second reason I'm bringing this up, Coach, is if I could ask Tony Dungy anything, you know, he mentored Mike Vick the other day. Did you know that? He actually met with Mike Vick in the federal prison and actually mentoring Mike Vick on his road to recovery. But that's a whole nother story, Coach. But what I'm telling you is...
Any dog with him?
No. He didn't. It's not allowed in the federal penitentiary, Coach. But Doug Biscuits, I think he had in his pockets. But what I'm telling you is, if I could ask Tony Dungy one question, you know what it would be?
What's that, Coach?
Honestly. I see he lost a son. You remember, and the NFL heart went out to Tony Dungy, and he's a very, very good spiritual man, and he's a very good father, and he's a very good husband, and that's what I would ask him about, and it totally wouldn't be about football, but the emphasis would be on football, because my question to him would be, how could you have a successful football coaching career? And you're going to aspire to this question, Coach. And have a very productive family life, too.
Very good point. Very good point.
Because out of all the coaches that I see that seems to keep it together, he will be on my forefront list. Because he seemed to have it all together on the home front and the coaching front. And as you know, we're talking about the love and passion of something. You put many, many hours into it. And you're away from home an awful lot. But when you talk to his wife or his other child that's still living, that they talk nothing but kudos about their father as well as everybody around the league. So it would imagine to me that he's a guy that has the right formula and the balance for both. And that's what I would want to share and ask him, because as you know, your passion sometimes following your dream takes a toll on your family life.
I have no question about that, Coach. But, you know, I think that they bought into what he was doing, and you need to have that kind of support. You know, they always say behind every great man is a great woman, and that's that's factual, because, you know, they have to be there because, you look at the coaches throughout history and time. You know, they spend hours upon hours and evenings, and that sometimes it's a 9 months, you know, sometimes it's an all year round job. And but you know there's some fruits to that, and I think that they have to buy into the system, and I think that's what happened with Tony Dungy, is that they bought into it and supported him 100% in his effort and his endeavor, which makes things easier. I mean, if you got that kind of support, it does make your road easier, because it's difficult to balance both, and. That may have been his only one passion there. And graciously enough for him, he had a support system in place that allowed him to do that. Now, Coach, let me ask you this. We're moving up now, and I'm going to take you down to one of the greats just recently, and I'm going to go back to some of the things we talked about real quickly about challenges. And I know we've got a lot to talk about in this show, and don't have much time. But the final person I would ask you about would be that of the youngest head coach that just won a Super Bowl. Well, let me back up before I talk to him. John Madden, he's got all these games out. You know, he does an illustrator. He just recently retired. He's not coming back to broadcasting. But he had a great career as a Raider coach, and he had a great broadcasting career. He has been a great time with producing or being a part of these video games that's just exploded across the country. If you had an opportunity to talk with Big John, what would you ask him?
How much money does he really make, Coach? How much revenue does he really get off the Madden game? How much money does he make from Fox Sports that he used to work, and now he was working with ABC Coach and all the commercials that he does, tough acting to acting, and he was a true entrepreneur, but he was definitely a student of the game of football. He was a very distinct voice in football, and people loved his genuine, just clear-cut, decisive, honest voice that he had about the approach about the game. And that's what I would ask him, though, Coach. How much revenue was he bringing in, and how can I possibly jump on ship, Coach?
And quite frankly, you know, to kind of add on, the one thing I would be curious about, I'm not curious about it. I think he brought a lot to the game because he helped explain things on air more so than any other sportscaster prior to him. And that made a plus for people to enjoy the game more with his teleprompter and illustrator. He was able to go back and explain things. But my last coach, one of your favorites, I know it's your all-time favorite young coach and just made it to the Super Bowl. He's top of the heap right now. He's He's doing great things. He inherited. He put together a team to go to the Super Bowl in 2 years, a lot quicker than his predecessors. And that's Mike Tomlin. Opportunity to talk with Mike Tomlin. What would you ask, Coach?
Does he have any openings on his staff, Coach? I would love to coach in Pittsburgh someday, and I would like to know if he had any openings on his staff. Basically, is what I would love to talk to him about. You know, it's a great coach. He is a great coach. He won a Super Bowl in 2 years, which is a very, very interesting feat, Coach. And one of the things you started to say that I disagree with wholeheartedly is everybody keeps saying that he inherited a Super Bowl
team. Well, I corrected myself.
And I know you did, Coach, but you brought me to a very interesting point. Mike Tomlin didn't inherit a Super Bowl team, Coach, because after the Super Bowl, it was 2 years in between that the Steelers did not go back to the Super Bowl. And a little-known history fact, Coach, is that it was only 22 players remaining on that team this year that went to the previous Super Bowl. So that was not the same Pittsburgh team that everybody keep thinking that he inherited from Bill Cowher, his predecessor. It was a totally different team, and Tomlin did a great job putting his stamp on it, bringing in people like Moore in the backfield that helped out a whole heck of a lot. And you know, I just had to tell you all those things, Coach, because, you know, I just know you knew the facts.
Okay. What was the question? Did he ask him a question yet, Coach?
Yeah, that's what I would ask him. Did he have an opening on his staff, Coach? And we have a caller from the 410 area code. Caller, are you there? All right, Coach, we seem to be having some type of technical difficulty with patching the callers through tonight, but nevertheless, the show must go on.
Coach, let me ask you this. We went down the years of some great coaches, got some great insight from all these coaches. Now, here's the challenge portion. You know, obviously, throughout history, different teams have made it with different styles of coaches, different chemistries of teams. Is there something that you may have picked up on all these interviews with these great coaches to either incorporate into your style of coaching to help you explain the game better or teach the game better? And what would you think would be the key, or is there a key to a winning football team? Is there a combination, you know, toughness, softness, letting players be themselves, or, you know, giving special treatment to various, like, special players like Jimmy Johnson used to do? You know, if you play like a star, I'll treat you like a star. You know, play like a scrub, I'm going to treat you like a scrub. What, if anything, would you consider that would make a very positive impact on a very successful team, with knowing all the information you've got from all these previous great coaches?
Well, one of the things I would say that makes a successful team, and one of the things that I did get from some of the coaches that I watched in interviews, Bill Walsh comes to mind because of his coaching style and teaching style in the classroom. He spent a lot of time in the classroom explaining the game, how he wanted and perceived the game to be, and that, I think, really translated on the field for the 49ers in the 80s, Coach. So I think that was one of the things. The teaching of the game is a big instrumental part of the game that I think is overlooked. We assume that a lot of the new players know the game and know how, when you try to describe what you want as a coach, that they can interpret that. In fact, Coach, a lot of people don't know. And you have to take them back to the grassroots of just teaching the fundamentals, and not only the fundamentals, your vision of how you perceive the game to be.
And that's true. I agree with you there. And I want to jump over to the player side real quick, because, you know, you have players that have, you know, coached or tutelaged under various coaches as they were coming up, whether it be in high school or college or semi-pro, and then they get to, you know, the pro league. And now you've got players dealing with a different style of coach. That's got to be a challenge, Coach, because, you know, where that individual could have been a star at his school, and now he's amongst many that are just like him. And or he doesn't have the aptitude to study the playbook, or he doesn't have the work ethic, but he has the very skills. How do you balance all of that and work that into the chemistry of a team that you're trying to formulate and try to get to a championship?
Well, what I would do, Coach, is, like I said, I would definitely have a teaching session, a lot of classroom time, a lot of explaining as far as what it is that my vision is about football and where I'm trying to take the team, the continuity of football, the camaraderie, the teamwork, the study habits, because a large amount of people do not know how much study goes into actually the game of football. It's almost like class. And I think that's some of the things that people omit telling you, that it's a lot of preparation and work that goes into preparing for football games, Coach. A lot of details, a lot of film, a lot of study sessions, a lot of understanding, a lot of footwork, a lot of physical drills. It's just a lot that goes into the game that you see on Saturdays and Sundays that people really have no clue about.
So do you treat that player that comes with those talents? How do you work that player? Because I remember years ago we had a player that came up to us one time, and, you know, we were doing drills, and, you know, when we were doing breakdowns, you know, he just wouldn't get down and let the dirt touch his jersey. I mean, he basically walked off the field. I mean, no question the person had talent, but obviously the way he was tutored or what he was dealing with in the past, it just didn't suit the team that, you know, you were coaching at the time. And how do you deal with, you know, players that come from that? What are one of the techniques that you use to kind of to get them to mesh together? Because you've got 25, 30, 45 players, 50 players on the roster. And 11, you need 11 on the offense, 11 on defense. You got a special team. How do you weed out the cream of the crop, and with all those personalities, so they would gel and work like a glove on a hand?
One of the things, you're absolutely right, Coach. One of the things that you work on instinctively when you bring a team together is continuity. You try to bring that team together instinctively to get them to understand that they have to be a one mindset and like mind. There's no I in the word team. You heard it many times before, and there's no glory in just me. It's all about team. And one of the things that I try to do as a coach is instill team in the players first. Bring that team together. Instill the word team and we and us and their vocabulary to bring them together as a team, because without that, Coach, you're not going to be very successful. Until you bring a team together as a team, your success is going to be minimal.
That's true, and I want to point out a couple of players. I know we had a brother tandem on our team once, and it was had a great one of the brothers was a really good quarterback, and his brother was a running back. And it was two different mindsets, same family, but, you know, two different mindsets. And, of course, throughout the program, early years of that team, we had a rough time trying to get especially those two to be on the same sheet of paper. But eventually they did get it. And, matter of fact, they've got scholarships to college, frankly, and they're doing a great job in college. But it took them a while to get that concept, and you know, we had a rough couple of years because of it. But eventually, it sunk in. So when you have a player like that, and you have, like, for example, we got T.O. He just left Dallas, now he's going to Buffalo. You know, I mean, if you're trying to get a winning, you know, team, and you're trying to get some cohesiveness together, when you get a player like that, Coach, I mean, what message are you sending? I mean, Jerry Jones did it, and it backfired. You know, they had the same issue up in Philadelphia, and now he's in Buffalo. I mean, as a coach, you didn't have a say in that, but now he's on your team. How do you, what are you dealing with?
Well, I'm gonna be honest, Coach. I'm gonna say this to you about the days, and if some of the plus and minuses that I see. the plus that I see, you have a plethora of great athletes to come through now. I mean, just superb athletes, Coach. Well-conditioned, superb athletes. One of the biggest minuses that I see is too many individuals in the NFL today. And like I said, when you build a concept of team, you can go far. And let's just use T.O. for instance. You know, I mean, most of the time you talk to this guy, you got to talk to Rosenhaus's agent. You know, I mean, one thing that's changed in the NFL is that you can't even talk to the person before you talk to his agent. You know, their agent is in the locker room like they are part of the team, Coach. You know, I mean, they ain't got this. The NFL's marketing has been so great that it also spoiled the root of the word team and the concept of what they're really doing there. I mean, because, I mean, this guy is at the practice making tennis shoes commercials, water bed commercials, and any other kind of commercial to get endorsements in there, and is really taking his focus away for what he's really there for, to play football. And that's some of the negative things that I don't like about the NFL because, you know, as a coach, all you want to do is bring the team together as a team to play football to move forward. And some of these other distractions are just that, distractions, Coach. And this is why when you have big personalities like a T.O. on your team, it becomes a major distraction in the locker room.
So, again, Coach, you know, the question is, how do you deal with that in trying to incorporate that?
How would I deal with it? Or how does people deal with it in general?
How would you, if you were faced in that situation, because we're talking about the challenges of a coach, because your hands are pretty much tied because, you know, it's not like, and that's one of the things that we talked about is, you know, that base salary. I think if you had that base salary for that player coming in, you wouldn't have to deal with all this kind of stuff. But subsequently, you know, when your receiver goes down, you gotta find a quality receiver. And you bring a quality receiver, and such as a T.O., to your league, who's a, you know, showpiece, mouthpiece, the whole 9 yards, and let's say he either comes mid-season or right at the tail end of your previous season, and then you've got that type of player on your team that you've got a Bill Belichick team that, you know, that everything's done and everybody, you know, does everything the way they're supposed to, just like the, you know, they bought that one running back who they thought they was going to have a problem. They bought Corey Dillon. They brought him up. They thought they were going to have a problem, but he fit into the system. He conformed, and it's something that Belichick doing up there that works. But asking you, I mean, if you get that kind of play, I mean, how do you deal with that, trying to establish what you're trying
well,
to do?
Well, the way I would deal with it is be on the forefront first, Coach, to be quite honest. I would be up in management and in the GM's office adamantly opposing the trade of T.O. coming to the team. That would be my first move, to be quite honest, because I understand the division and the chemistry that it's going to bring. Let's just say I can't make that call and T.O. does come to the team. I would adamantly express to T.O. what my concept and rules are.
And your second move, Coach, would be out the door because the general manager told you to get out.
Well, you know, Coach, you know what they say. You know what they say. When you hire me, you know what you're going to get.
That's true.
More or less, you know what I mean? And you stick to your guns and morals because the same virtues and values to get you that job is the same ones that are going to get you another job, Coach.
That's very true, Coach. And like you said, there's some of the challenges, that's just part of it. We're just scratching the surface with this because, you know, as a player's side, you know, we talked about the coach's side, but on the player's side, you know, we talked a little bit about it, about them coming from different disciplines and different coaches and then having to deal with being able to conform. There are some challenges because, like you said, you have a lot of players that have great talent and unfortunately, like you talked about, you know, can't deal with the teaching aspect of the game, you know. If you didn't attend college or were able to read English language because, you know, the terminology changes throughout the league, you know, blast could be a number of things, but it's just a terminology. And they spend hours upon hours on knowing the playbook. And that playbook is almost about thicker than the book War and Peace, you know, a four-volume book. And you got the player, you got the greatest talent in the world, but if you can't know where you're supposed to go, it's different. They've been showing on the TV now. They've got this thing on the NFL channel with the Hard Knocks. They're showing that. And that's an interesting. If people really want to get a perspective on, you know, new players coming into the league and dealing with training camp and dealing with, you know, that whole arena, Now, that's a good program to take a look at, and I would even suggest, you know, some of the women that are watching and actually playing football in the IWFL, you know, take a look at that, because, you know, then they might appreciate, you know, what the coaches around the IWFL are trying to accomplish, and the things that they are having them doing is being done for a reason. And then that's where they get their toolage from, so they, you know, to pass it on to them. So even after they finish playing the game, you know, they themselves may be even coaches of the game, the coach women's football.
You're absolutely correct, Coach. That's a great point, and that's going to lead us in the segue of sponsorship, Coach. We're going to read off the list of sponsors that help us with this great talk show each and every week. Coach, take it away.
And that's right. We're going to look good. It's getting warm out there for the summer, and we're going to go down there, Coach. I'm going to take you down from Beanieware. I'm going to spot you a nice T-shirt, you know, get you that extra medium that you normally wear, and get you a true size, and take you right on to Beanieware over in White Marsh, Maryland, with some great T-shirts and other sports apparel. And, you know, while I'm there, Coach, I'm even going to treat you. We're going to take a little run down to Waverly Shopping Center over at Eddie's Market, and we're going to buy some coffee for your home. We're going to stop and get you some Zeke's Coffee, Coach. Zeke's Coffee. That's right, Zeke's Coffee, where you can get Zeke's Coffee not only by the cup, but also by the pound, Coach. So, you know, we're going to do a little shopping this weekend. It's going to be a nice weekend. You know, the Nighthawks have a bye, so we have an opportunity to go out and do some shopping. We're going to take a look at some of these venues. And then what we're going to do, Coach, we're going to, after we get our little coffee, get a T-shirt, we're going to run down to Velocity Sports, and we're going to get our game on. We're going to go down to 1427 Clarkville Road in Mount Washington, Maryland, and we're going to get our workout on so we can get good and fit, tight and strong, so we can build up our character and our determination and help build our beliefs and our desires to coach this game. And then once all that's done, after we put in a hard sweat, Coach, we're going to make that drive downtown to 713 West Pratt to Pete
and a cup of Joe.
Got a cup of Joe, that's right. We're going to go down there and relax. We're going to stay away from all the traffic and the headache, and then end our great evening with a great cup of coffee down at Peace and Cup of Joe. And as always, if anyone out there interested in sponsoring a player with the Nighthawks team, they can go to our website, BaltimoreNighthawks.com. And or contact tbryant73@gmail.com if they're interested in some great Nighthawks sports sponsorship package. And before I forget, again, if you mention Velocity Sports Performance, they'll probably have some great promotions for you there as well. And for upcoming games, you can go to brownticket.com for all the Nighthawks ticket information and their game tickets. Again, it's a great package, and we challenge everyone. And as always, you mentioned this show. I'll put up two tickets for people to come down and see the Nighthawks on the next home game. And I believe, Coach, I'm going to put the challenge out to you to come up with a couple tickets. I know you things a little tight, but you can afford two tickets for a family of four to enjoy the game.
Well, Coach, times are hard, money is tight, and what you said just wasn't right. So... All I'm going to say to that, Coach, is we're always happy to sponsor people to come out and enjoy your IWFL football game with the Baltimore Nighthawks, because our fan base is getting bigger, Coach, and I think they are actually enjoying the old football game like it's meant to be enjoyed, Coach.
No question. It's Coach, and with that, we're going to go around the league to last week's scores, and we're going to start off with the Aftershock and Locomotion. Big, big score there, 62-0, Locomotion over the Aftershock. It gets them in the win column. And how about the Blitz over the Hurricanes with a 48-0 win there. And we had a low-scoring game with the Banshees and the Shockwave. The Shockwave pulled that out in the fourth quarter with a 2, you heard it right, 2-0 score.
They playing baseball, Coach?
Well, somebody must have backed up and tripped over the end zone line. And that was a safety, Coach.
Okay.
And we had the militia 47-0 over the Crushers. And, of course, the champion Diamonds, they're still rolling strong down there with a 32-7 over the Explosion. And, of course, we had the Nighthawks taking a loss to the Detroit Demolition. And that was a 13-0 score there. And the Fox over the Crush with a 14-0 score.
You know the score I want to hear, Coach?
I'm going to get you there. I saved the best for last, Coach. And the Intensity, 13-0 over the Freedom. That was a good game there, another shutout there. And the Fury as well, 21-0 on the Energy. I tell you, I still think they need some Red Bull or something to get them going, because they just can't get into the win column there. And then you've got the Justice, 40-14 over the Rebels in a good match there. And you had the Breakers over the Maniacs, 55-0. They just can't seem to get out of that assignment down there. And the Phoenix Firebirds picked up a win with a 42-15 over the Mayhem. Congratulations to them. And the Monsoon picked up a big score, 54-0 over the Menaces. And then we had the Punishers with 26-14 victors over the Punishers. And we had the Sirens with a 30-0 shutout of the Pride, as well as the Amazons, 36-21 over the Quake. And I'm sorry, it wasn't the Phoenix Firebirds. I forget what they are, but they did win 42-15. But the Firebirds did win over the Sharks. I'm sorry, the Sharks went over the Firebirds, 33-14. And we had a score over the Tigers, 32-27, as well as the Force over the Tribe, 28-6. Had a big score with the Warriors over the Vixens, 54-16. I hope the Vixens can get a little bit bigger score. Anyway. The Illusion, 61-8 over the Vipers. And the upset of the week, Coach.
Go ahead.
The ECD, 27-7 over the Pittsburgh Passion. Woo! What can you say about that? What a spanking.
I can say that Pittsburgh didn't win the game, Coach.
No question. No, it must not have been home. Anyway, Coach. Moving on around the league, hey, with some great scores out there, looking for some great scores coming up in Week 5. And if you're interested in where your team is playing, just go to IWFLsports.com for all your favorite teams and get their agenda and schedules and go out and enjoy some great football.
No question there, Coach. Like you said previously, the Baltimore Nighthawks is on a bye this week. We're on a hiatus, Coach. We're recouping for the from the first four games here. We had mid-season for our season, Coach, and with four games remaining in the rest of our schedule. And we're going to come back with the Jersey Justice.
That's right, the Jersey Justice, not this week, but next week. And we're home again, and that should be another great turnout, and it should be another good game, Coach.
You're absolutely correct, Coach. We're going to welcome in the Jersey Justice. We're going to have fun.
As always, that's what we do. We have fun, Coach, and like I said, it's a great league again. Got to come out and see some great football with the IWFL. And moving now on to around the league, and we've got a couple seconds to get some things in, then we'll pick out one story, Coach. You know, Brett Favre is still in the mix.
Stop it. Stop it. I refuse to talk about Brett Favre on this show, Coach. I refuse. It is forbidden to talk about Brett Favre on this show because as great as a football player he is, Coach, he needs to retire and stop it. And stop it.
He has a love for the game. You got to give it to him, Coach.
Yeah, he does.
Well, let's see what else we got going around. Ex-Cowboy Williams is going to the Bengals. What do you think about that one, Coach?
Yeah, very interesting points, Coach. And I told you we're not going to talk about Brett Favre, but I'm going to say this. Somebody texted us, emailed us on the chat web and said he can coach women's football, Coach. That should be pretty interesting, Coach. And Roy Williams going to the Cincinnati Bengals, I think, can help increase the intensity and the physicality of the well-deserved needed to be brought to Philadelphia. I mean, our Cincinnati Bengals, Coach.
And, of course, we got Matt Millens, you know, leaving the ownership box, joining the ESPN as football coverage of the game and studio analyst. That would be something different from him. But I've always liked Matt. He does a really good job. He just couldn't do a good job in Detroit.
Hey, you ain't lying there, Coach. You hit it right on the nose. And it's been another great show, Coach. It's always interesting talking to you about various topics around the league. We thank everybody out there on Blog Talk Radio web chat. We thank the callers that tried to call in, but for some reason we couldn't connect you. We apologize, and it will be worked out in the future. And to all those who wanted to listen but is not listening to Nighthawks Radio. Coach, we want to thank you as well, because we know soon you're going to come on board to this great talk show. And like always, thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for having me and Coach Coop on the show each and every week. It's been truly a blessing. And as always, for all the comments that have been written on the web chat and wanted to be written and said live over the air, Coach, there's no good opinion. There's no bad opinion. It's simply your opinion. Good night and see you next week.